Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Pehe Amud Aleph by the two dots. The Gemara says, Mishana falalav mapolet v'chule. They're quoting from our Mishnah, and then our Mishnah has a list of sfeikot. If it's this way, if it's that way, in all these instances, we are mefachim et agal. The Gemara wants to know, Mayhamar, what are all these sfeikot have to do with? Why is the Mishnah including all these different sfeikot? So, lo mi baik amar, it's saying not only. Lo mi baik sfeik husham, sfeik enusham, that in a case where we're not certain if he's there or not there, Diite chayu, but if he is there for sure, he's alive. Demafachinan, there we allow you to move the stones or the mapolet away. Elafilu safek chay safek meit. Even if there's a question of whether we're going to find someone alive or not, mefachim. Even in that type of safek, we still clear away the debris in order to see if there's someone there. Velo mi bayi safek chay safek meit diyisrael. That's not only true when we're certain there's a Jew in there, and it's a question as to whether they're alive or dead. Elafilu safek kuti safek yisrael. Even if there's a question as to whether there's a Kuti or Yisrael in there, we still are mefachim et agal. So no matter all of these sfeikot that are piled up on top of each other, if there's any possibility of there being a Jew that's in there, a Jew that's alive that's in there, then we uncover them, no matter how many other sfeikot are piled up on top of that. Now, matzua chai, fachin. If we find him alive, then we continue to clear off the pile. Where it says, matzua chai, pshita. I mean, what are you going to do? Leave him there now that you found him alive? Matzricha dafilu lechayisha. Even if we know that he's not going to live out the day, or he's not going to live for an extended amount of time, we still continue to clear off the pile and to give him that opportunity to live the chayei sha'ah, which is the principle the Gemara has in general, which is that chayei sha'ah is chayim, that even a short period of life or time is enough to allow us to be mechalel Shabbat or do anything for the individual that's in danger here. If he's found dead, then you leave him there. The Gemara says, Hanami Pshita. Again, why would you continue to uncover or take him out at that point in time? If you find him that he's passed away already, there's no reason to continue to be mechalel Shabbat. It says, Latzricha, the Rebbe Yehuda ben Lakish. We do need it because of Rebbe Yehuda ben Lakish. Titania, Emetzelina to maybe Ibn Adelika. One is not allowed to save someone who's already passed away from the fire. I'm Rebbe Yehuda ben Lakish. Shamati Shimetzelina to make Ibn Adelika. That you're allowed to save the mate from a fire on Shabbat. By Fila Rebbe Yehuda ben Lakish, Lokamar, Elimitok Shadam Bahul al Meito. The only reason there that we have a dispensation, the only reason we allow you to save the mate in that instance, even though the mate is Muksa, is because if we don't let you save the mate, the person's going to put out the fire and violate Shabbat. So better he takes out the maid than he puts out the fire. So we allow him to take it out because the person's concerned about the niftar that's there. So he lo shari le ate le chubile. Because if we don't allow him to take it out, he's going to end up extinguishing the fire. Of a hocha, he lo shari le might lo the mevad. Over here, if we don't let him continue, what is he going to do? There's no alternative to taking care of the mate in this instance. That's going to be a violation of Shabbat. If we stop and say no more, that's it. So over here, even according to Rabbi Yehuda ben Lakish, once we reach the point where we find that he's mate, we do not continue going onward. Tan Rabbanan, Ad Heichan Hu Bodek. How far do you have to check in order to know that the person has passed away? So the Gemara says, Ad Chutmo. You have to check until his nose. That means if you come to his feet, you have to continue going up to his face until you reach his nose so you can tell whether he's alive or not, whether he's breathing. Vieshomrim, Ad Libo. And some say until his heart. If you can get to his heart and you can check there whether he has a heartbeat or not, that'll tell you whether he's alive. Badak Umatzai El Yonim Meitim. If you go ahead and check and you find the upper layers, people have already passed away or were killed in the mapolet, lo yamar kvar meitu atachtonim. Don't assume that the people below have passed away. Maseya, because there was a case, umatsua yonim meitim, they found the upper layers, people who were on the higher levels were actually passed away. Atachtonim, people were lower down in the pile or in the avalanche, chayim, and they were alive. So therefore, we don't make any assumptions. Just because we found someone passed away, we don't assume that everybody else after them is passed away. We continue digging until we are certain that there's no one left there that is alive. So name hani tanae, ki hani tanae. Let's say that these tanaim are similar to another machloket tanaim that we have, the tanya. Meichan havlad notzar. From where is the creation of the vlad, the fetus start? Merosho. So from his head, shenemar, mimei imi ataguzi. That from the innards of my mother, you cut me out. But the Gemara is playing on the word gozi, it has to do with hair. So that from the beginning of my bowels of my mother, gozi, you created me starting with my hair. And it says, the pasuk in Yirmiyahu, gazi nizrech vashlichi. You should cut off your hair, Yerushalayim, and throw it away because you're going to be in mourning. But you see here that the word gozi, or to cut, is used in the context of hair. And so what it means here, the Gemara is saying, is that the Pasuk in Tehillim, which says that you have created me, you have taken me out from the bowels of my mother, and the beginning of the Pasuk talks about how Hashem created you in the womb, that's talking about Gazi. Gazi as a reference to hair. And so therefore the head or the hair is the first place that a person is created, or the Vlad is created. Abishal Omar Mitu Baro. Abishal says that the Vlad is created from the belly button, Umishalech Shorashav Elech Velech, and then it develops around the Tiburo. Obviously Abishal is influenced by the fact that there's an umbilical cord, and that umbilical cord must be the place where the creation of the Vlad starts. Mar says, no, they don't have to necessarily be correlated. Just because a fetus is created first from his head, or first from his belly, that doesn't have to necessarily influence where we check in a person to make sure that they're still alive. Because that's in the creation of an individual. Because in general, most things are created from the center. So too over here, the Vlad is created from the center. That the major life force of the individual is from his nose, from his breathing. And therefore he would agree that you have to check to the nose, even though he's created from the center. Talks about in Noach, when it's talking about those individual, everything that's wiped out, it talks about anything that was alive. How do they describe something that's alive? Anything that's mushmat ruach chayim be'apav, that has breath that comes out of its nose, or from its face. So that is the definition of life. Amar Papa Machloge Mimato Lamalo. That's only if you come up to the mate from down below, and then you're moving up the body. Aval Mimalo Lamato, if you come to the head of the person, and then you're going down, Gemin the Balag Leat Chotmo Shuvenu Tzarich. Once you reach the nose, you don't have to go further down. So that the check is at the nose level, so it's only a question if you haven't gotten to that part yet. So you can't assume the person has passed away because you don't have any signs of life in the lower part of the body, until you reach the head. But if you started at the head and you don't see any signs of life, you do not have to check the remainder of the body. Now this sugi obviously has significant impact in terms of when a person has really passed away. It has impact in terms of medical questions, when can you take somebody off a respirator, or when, as a halachic question as to when you need to stop sustaining an individual. And number two, it has halachic ramifications in terms of organ donations, which is that if you take the Gemara here literally, that the two opinions of when a person has passed away is either when they have a cessation of breathing or a cessation of heartbeat. If either of those are the definition of death, then as long as a person, even if they're still on a respirator or they have something artificially keeping their heart beating, then the person is classified still alive in halacha. And if you wait until the cessation of the heartbeat or the cessation of the breathing when the respirator is taken off, by that time it's too late for the person to have their organs donated because they're already past the point of salvage. On the other hand, if you believe that the death of a person can be determined by brainstem death, now this topic is much too great for me to deal with here in the sugya, I'm just bringing up the issues, but if you think that brainstem death can be the determinant of death, because once you have brainstem death, even though the person is breathing or their heart is beating, that has nothing to do with the person's function. The person themselves is not generating that, and therefore it's only a machine that's doing it, and that machine doesn't make them alive. And therefore, brainstem death is the determinant of death. Again, that has impact in terms of when is a person considered to be passed away, so you no longer have to provide for them or keep them alive. In addition to that, it has impact in terms of the organ donations, because if brainstem death is death and you keep the person in the respirator, then the organs are actually able to be donated, and it's not a problem because the person's already passed away. So that does have significant impact on both of these issues. It's a very difficult and sensitive topic, but this Gemara plays a pivotal role in that issue. Now the Gemara continues. Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah mahalchim baderech, Levi Hasadar, which would mean Levi the Gaon, or Levi Hasarad is the other girsa, which is he's someone who made big day sarad, that he used to make clay sarad or nets for traps for individuals. Rabbi Shmuel beno Shel, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, and Rabbi Shmuel, the son of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Malchin Achareyem. Those two individuals were behind the three Chachamim. Nishala Shelo Azu Bifneyem. This was the question that was raised in this company. Minay Nebu Hilach Nefesh Adochet HaShabbat. What is the source in the Torah for the fact that a life or death situation is doche et haShabbat, overrides the keeping of Shabbat? Nene Rabbi Shmuel v'amar. Rabbi Shmuel says, I'll learn it out. Imba machteret imatze aganav. If you find the ganav who's trying to tunnel into your house, umazes safek amon ba, safek al nefesh shod ba. This individual is coming maybe to murder, maybe to steal your money, and murder, killing of an individual, causes the land to be contaminated, and for Hashem to leave, nevertheless, the Baal HaBayit is allowed to kill this individual who's tunneling into his house, even though there's uncertainty here, whether he's coming to kill the Baal HaBayit or simply take his money. So if that's the case where we have a safek, and we still allow you to violate Shvichut Damim in that case, then certainly, certainly when it comes to Bikuach Nefesh, where there's certain death involved here, or there's a safek death, then we're going to allow you to violate Shabbat, which is not on that same parity with Shvichut Damim. Shvichut Damim is one of the cardinal sins. It's one of the things that you have to be Yehareg V'Aliyah Bor for. So if you can violate that in the case of safek Bikuach Nefesh, then certainly you can violate Shabbat for safek Bikuach Nefesh. Nene Rabbi Akiva Amar, V'chi Yazid Ish Al Re'eyu. That if a person intentionally kills another individual, you can take it from my mizbeach to kill him. I will just make a side note here about which seems to be a strange phrase in the Torah. It's found in Parshat Mishpatim, and it seems to indicate that you have to kill the person from mizbechi. Chazal darshan from that, that even if a person's holding onto the mizbeach, you kill him. That comes out of Hammurabi's code. In Hammurabi's code and many of the earlier law codes, there is a rule that if you run to the sanctuary, that you are safe. That if you go to the sanctuary, then actually you cannot be killed or held accountable for killing someone else. And hence, the reason for a religious location we call the sanctuary, because it provides sanctuary. And we know that in Tanakh, someone tries that. Yoav, when he's trying to escape from Shlomo killing him, runs to the Mizbeach, to hold on to the Mizbeach. Benayahu ben Yehoyada, who's sent by Shlomo to kill him, is actually uncertain as to what to do. He goes back to Shlomo, and Shlomo says, kill him! It doesn't matter. And this is actually the Torah's way of saying that those codes are wrong. That a person who murders intentionally is going to be held accountable for it. There's no safekeeping. There's no religious sanctuary that's going to save you. He's taken even from the mizbeach you take to kill him. That's just as a sidebar, but here, Rabbi Akiva's proof is that you can take from my mizbeach to kill him, but not from on top of the mizbeach. As Rashi explains, that if the Kohen is not starting the avodah, then we take him and we bring him into the din for the murder. On the other hand, if he's already started the avodah, he gets a dispensation to finish the avodah before we take him to a din. So over there, again, where you have this avodah, which is allowed to protect this person's life, where he may not even be deserving of that dispensation, yet we grant it to him. That's only if we're going to put him to death, or the Kohen has information that will help us put someone to death. If it's to help someone out, meaning that he knows some sort of schut, or he knows evidence that will help out the person that's on trial, then we take him even from the middle of avoda, we pull him off to help someone else. This Kohen who's doing the avoda, we're not certain whatever he has in his pocket to help out this individual, whether that's going to really pan out to help him out. Nevertheless, we're going to allow him to leave the avoda. And we know that avoda is doheh Shabbat, because you bring the korbanot musaf, the korbanot tamid are brought on Shabbat. So avoda, which is doche Shabbat, and when you have a question about life and death, meaning in a court case where this person has the possibility of saving the life of that individual, possibly, we still take him away from the avoda. Then certainly, in kal v'chomer, the pivach nefesh, doche the Shabbat. Something where we have a safek nefeshot, certainly that should override Shabbat. If it overrides avoda, which overrides Shabbat, then certainly it should override Shabbat. Nene, Rabbi Lazar v'amar, umam mila she'echad mi-matayim v'arbaim shmonei varim shva'adam. But milah, which is one of the 248 limbs in the individual, dochet Shabbat, because we know that a baby who has his meal on the 8th day is dochet Shabbat. Pavachomer lechol gufo shedochet Shabbat. Certainly, if we're talking about saving of his whole body, that it should be dochet Shabbat. We also see Rabbi Yehuda Omer et shabtotai tishmoru, that you have to keep my Shabbatot. Yachol lachol. Do you think anytime, all Shabbatot, you have to keep no matter what? Tamalomer ach says ach et shabtotai tishmoru. Ach is always chalek, comes to divide. Say sometimes yes, sometimes no. Sometimes you keep Shabbat, sometimes you don't keep Shabbat. What's that dispensation not to keep Shabbat? That's in the case of pikuach nefesh. Rabbi Yonatan and Yosef Omer ki kodesh hilachem. You must keep the Shabbat because it's holy to you, which is the subsequent pasuk to atat deber bnei selimor ach et shabtotai tishmoru ki od hi beni uveinechem l'dor dechem l'dat ki ani Hashem makadishchem ushmartem et haShabbat ki kodesh hilachem mechalala mochumat ki kol oseh ba melacha v'nechvata nefesh ha'i mikerev ameha. So he says, Gigol Eshilachem comes to teach you. He misorabi adchem velo atem misorim biyada. Shabbat is given to you for your benefit, not that you're given into the hands of Shabbat. Well, when's that situation that comes up? In a life or death situation. You don't have to give in, succumb to the Shabbat, and pass away because the Shabbat is there. Therefore, we violate the Shabbat in order to take control. And take control means that the person is granted that dispensation in times of life and death. Shimon ben Nasi Omer, the next pasuk afterwards, which is, Veshamru b'nei Yisrael ta Shabbat, Lasot et Shabbat dorotam brit olam. Amra Torah, halel alav Shabbat achat, kedei shishmru Shabbatot arbe. You're allowed to violate one Shabbat in order that the person can keep many Shabbatot. That's what's Veshamru b'nei Yisrael ta Shabbat. Why is it Veshamru? Shamru means we have to look at the whole picture. The whole picture is that if you violate this one Shabbat, you may save his ability to keep many more Shabbatot. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel, I havai hatam, if I was with them, havamina didei adifa midirhu. I have an answer, and I think my answer is better than all of them, which is, the pasuk says, v'chai behem, v'lo shiyumot behem. Pasuk in Pasefer Vayikra says that you must live by the tenets of the Torah, and not die by the tenets of Torah. And therefore, you have to live. Live is the primary, most important factor, and that overrides everything else. So v'chai behem is this overarching theme, which then governs. So if there's a question about whether you're going to live or keep a mitzvah, life takes precedence. Only in the cases of the three cardinal sins is that not true. But otherwise, v'chai behem is the overarching principle, and the Gemara has to bring psuhim to prove the fact that the other three items are not subject to v'chai behem. So Amar Rava, the kulu itlehu pircha, all of these limudim that teach us that you're allowed to be mechala on Shabbat have something that can undermine them. Bar mi d'shmuel d'let le'pircha. Except from this one from Shmuel, which is unrefuted, is something that stands even in the face of questioning. So now the Gemara goes through each one of them. Dear Rabbi Shmuel, the Rabbi Shmuel, which was the first proof from B'machteret, the person who tunnels in. Why is that not a good proof? Dilma Kirova, why are you allowed to kill the person who's entering into the house? Because of the circumstances. Dama Rova, my time of B'machteret. What's the reason that the Torah grants you the ability to kill this individual who's tunneling into your house? Chazakah in Adam Amirat Shmuel Mimono. It's a chazakah that a person will not allow someone to come in his house and take all of his possessions. He's going to stand there and he's take a stand. V'hai, mi de yodo de gai le'ape. And this machteret, person who's telling at the house, knows that the Baal Bayit will stand there and not let him go. V'amrei, gai le'apai, katimale. If I see him, I'm going to kill him. V'tomra ra, bar l'chor gacha, hashkem l'chor go. Someone comes to kill you, defensively you should kill first. You can preemptively kill to stop someone from killing you. Well, if that's the case, then we know that the person who's entering with machteret knows there's a possibility that the Baal HaBayit will come to stop him. If he comes to stop him, then he knows what he's going to do. He's going to kill the Baal HaBayit. A person who's going with machteret says, either I'm going to get the money, or there's a possibility that the Baal HaBayit is going to stop me, because if he sees me, he's not going to let me do this. If that's the case, I'm going to have to kill him. And when he comes in with the intent of killing the Baal HaBayit. Since he's already come in with the intent to kill the Baal HaBayit, he's a rodef from the beginning. And since he's a rodef, that's why the Baal HaBayit is allowed to kill him, because he's basically defensively killing this rodef. This person who's telling into his house, who would have killed him if he didn't stand up first and kill the person coming in b'machteret. So because of that, then, v'ashkachan vadai, safek minolan. That only tells you when there's a vadai din of pikuach nefesh, you could violate Shabbat from this din. But if it's a safek, we wouldn't have that din from machteret, because machteret is looked at as a vadai, not a safek, like Rabbi Shmuel suggested. So because of that, it really turns out that it's a vadai. He's a rodef here, it's not a safek. So therefore the Kal v'chomer of Rabbi Shmuel falls away. Now what about the other proofs? So Rashi talks about it. Rabbi Akiva's proof from the fact that we take someone off the Mizbeach to come and testify on behalf of a murderer that's on trial. So here it's a safek whether he's going to be efficacious in his defense of this murderer, yet we stop the avoda, which is Doche Shabbat. He says that's not necessarily the case, because we actually send two Tamidei Chachamim to go and check and to ask him and listen to what he has to say before we bring him to the courthouse. So therefore, there is some sort of preliminary check that says that there is something to what he's saying, and therefore we can't just dismiss it. Now that din of sending two Tamei Chachamim is when the defendant himself says, I have something to say to defend myself. We don't take him back to the court each time, but we allow two Tamei Chachamim to screen the issue. And Rashi says, we'll say the same thing about the Kohen. Before we pull him out of the Avodah, we'll send two Tamei Chachamim to screen the issue and see if it's worthwhile to bring him back. So when we're bringing him back already, we have a good sense that there's something Vadai here, not a Safek. So once again, you have the same problem, which is for Vadai, I know you can violate Shabbat. But for Safek, I don't have any evidence from this case of the Mizbeach. And the remainder of the proofs, including Mila and Akshab Dotai, and the other proofs, might only be true when you're talking about Vadai. There's no indication in the psukim by Mila. It's only a vada Mila that's doche et Shabbat. Also, the other psukim that say that you're allowed to either you're allowed to violate Shabbat for some reason, or b'shamaru, you can violate one Shabbat to keep many Shabbatot. Oh, kikodesh lehi lachem, that it's given to you to violate Shabbat. All of those can be said just bevadai. In the case of vadai pikuach nefesh, they may not be said in safek pikuach nefesh. There's no proof or evidence of the fact that by safek pikuach nefesh we would be doche Shabbat. All those proofs would only give you evidence of the fact that if you're tzvadai bikuach nefesh, you can doche Shabbat. But Shmuel's din, lately Pircha has no question on it, because it says, Ashei yaseh adam mitzvot v'chai b'hem, that a person should do the mitzvot and definitely live. But if there's any question about living, then he doesn't have to keep the mitzvot. Even when there's a case of safek, he doesn't have to keep the mitzvot. And to Shmuel, v'adei lately Pircha. But Shmuel has no question on it. Amar Avina v'itemer Rav Nachman b'Yitzhak, tav achare pilputa harifa, b'malitzino dekari. So he says that it's better to have one hot chili pepper than a whole basket full of mild peppers. Because you get one hot pepper, he gives you the right answer. He says you get a whole bunch of mild peppers that sound good, but they don't get you to that level where you get the right answer. Making the point that Shmuel, who was so sharp, was able to give the answer that was the conclusive answer, versus all the other reasons that were given by the Tanayim before, which were nice answers, but in the end, they don't stand up to the test of questioning. And therefore, we pass in Halacha Kishmuel, that the dispensation in the Torah to violate anything because of Safek Pikuach Nefesh is Bechai Behem. The Rambam actually quotes the reasoning of Rabbi Shimon ben Asya, that you should keep one Shabbat, Kedei Shemu Shema Tolot Harbei, and that has to be dealt with why the Rambam also brings that reason, and not just the reason of Bechai Behem. Okay, now we'll read the Mishnah. Chatat ve'asham vadai michaprim. And when it comes to a chatat and asham vadai, these are korbanot that are brought on sins. They are michaper. Once you bring the korban that you're supposed to bring, you do the vidoy, and you do the tshuva that you're supposed to do with it, they are michaper. Mita ve'yom ha'kippurim michaprim ima tshuva. Mita, death, and Yom Kippur are able to help you out with tshuva, along with doing tshuva. Tshuva mechaperet al averot kalot. Tshuva by itself is able to take care of averot kalot, the lighter violations, al asay, violation of a positive commandment, valot asay, and a violation of the negative precept, ve'al achamurot. But when it comes to more severe violations, which are the Gemara will discuss what is called chamurot and what are called kalot, then hutoleh ad shivo yom kippurim, you can do tshuva, but tshuva doesn't finish the whole process out until Yom Kippur comes and it cleans the slate. So you need tshuva plus Yom HaKippurim for these more severe violations. Haomer, echtav ha'ashuv, echtav ha'ashuv. Person who says, I will sin and then do tshuva, sin and do tshuva. Ein misbegim yadol so tshuva. That individual will not successfully do tshuva. Now, whether that's a statement of fact that tshuva won't help because he said, I will sin and then do tshuva, or whether that's a statement of probability, which is that a person who says, I'm going to sin and do tshuva, the likelihood is that they're not going to do tshuva, because the whole point of them sinning here is they don't care about the tshuva, and they'll never reach that point where they can fully do tshuva for what they did wrong. And that's why it says here, Ein maspikim yado laso tshuva. He will not successfully do tshuva. Echtav yom kippurim mechaper, ein yom kippurim mechaper. Person says, I will sin and Yom Kippurim will take care of me. Yom Kippurim does not take care of you in that case. Averot ben adam lamakom, Yom Kippurim mechaper. For Averot are between you and the Creator, Yom HaKippurim takes care of. Averot ben Adam lechavero, ein Yom HaKippurim mechaber ad shiratzet chavero. Ben Adam lechavero, there are two issues. Ben Adam lechavero is both a violation of a mitzvah ben Adam lemakom, but it's also a violation between you and your friend. And Hashem will only grant you that forgiveness if your friend is placated. So you must take care of what you did wrong to your friend, whether that's the money that you've taken it improperly, that you have to repay, or whether that's you've offended him and you have to ask him for mechila. Whatever it is, you have to first take care of the issue between you and your friend, and then only afterwards is Yom Kippur mechaper for the issue that's ben adam lemakom in that violation of ben adam lechavero. Torah Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, mikol chatotechem, lifnei Hashem tidharu, averot sheben adam lemakom, Yom Kippur mechaper. Because it says, mikol chatotechem lifnei Hashem. For the chatot that are before Hashem, then tidharu. That will be taken care of by Yom HaKippurim. That's from Parshat Achrimot, telling you what Yom HaKippurim does. Yom HaKippurim takes care of those chataim that are lifnei Hashem. He reparses the pasuk and doesn't say lifnei Hashem tidharu, that before Hashem you'll become tahor, but rather the chatotchem lifnei Hashem. Those chataim that are before Hashem, tidharu, they will be cleansed. They will be able to gain kapara on Yom HaKippurim. As an aside, that might have impact on the way that we conduct our Yom HaKippurim services, which is that when we talk about the Shem Hashem in the Mikdash, the Chazan says, Ki b'yom hazeh yechaper lechem et ardchem, mikol chatotoichem, lifnei Hashem, and then we stop, and we do the whole bowing down, and we say, va'koanim va'am, and they're all bowing down, we have this whole interceding paragraph that we put in, and then, the end of it, we say, and the Kohen Gadol finishes off, titaharu, he finishes off at way end, titaharu. Now the question is that really true? So it's a question as whether he just finishes lifnei Hashem titaharu. We just put that in the middle to understand where it all took place. But really, the Kohen Gadol says the whole pasuk straight through to titaharu. Or maybe there really is a split, and we say lifnei Hashem, and titaharu is actually afterwards, it's separate. And that might have to do with how you parse the pasuk over here. Because the way that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah parses the pasuk, he says, lifnei Hashem, then titaharu. He says that the pasuk is actually parsed that way. And then it makes sense the way that we parse it when we do the avoda, the Yom HaKippurim, in Seder Musaf. Am Rabbi Kiva, Shreichem Yisrael, lifnei atem mitarim. Rebbe says, well, how lucky are you, Klal Yisrael, before whom are you mitaher? Umi mitaher etchem? And who gives you tahara? Avichem sheba shemayim, your father in heaven, shenemar, v'zerakti aleichem mayim torim utahartem. It says that Hashem will sprinkle the waters of tahara on you, and you will become tahor. Ve'omer, and it also says, mikveh Yisrael Hashem. Some controversy as to whether the word Hashem should be in here, because there are two psukim in Yirmiyahu. There's a pasuk in Yirmiyahu in Perek Yud Zayin, pasuk Yud Gimel, that says, Mikveh Yisrael Hashem, kol azvecha yevoshu, visurai ba'aretz yikatevu, ki azvu mekor mayim chayim et Hashem. So if they're referring to that pasuk, then it should say Mikveh Yisrael Hashem. On the other hand, there is a pasuk in Yirmiyahu Yudalid, pasuk Chet, that says, Mikveh Yisrael Moshio Beit Sarah. Lama tiyeh kigir ba'aretz ukvareach natalalun. In one place in Yirmiyahu it says Mikveh Yisrael Hashem, and one time it says Mikveh Yisrael. Either one, the implicit Mikveh Yisrael, is Hashem who's bringing the Tahara. Ma Mikveh Mitayer Tatmeim, Af HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mitayer Yisrael. Just like a Mikveh is Mitayer, those people that are defiled, so too Hashem is the one that is Mitayer Yisrael. And therefore, Rabbi Akiva reads the pasuk, not like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, but rather, Mikol Chatotichem, Lifnei Hashem Titaharu. Before God, you are made Tahor. So that machlokin might influence how we parse the pasuk when the Kohen Gadol is saying the Shema Mikfurash and we're bowing down. Rabbi Meidan suggested that this machloket here in this Mishnah might actually influence how we say it, whether it really means Lifnei Hashem Titaharu and you say it all together, or whether you say Mikol Chatotichem Lifnei Hashem and then Titaharu should be left till later because there really is a break in the pasuk. And that might relate to the machloket that we have here as well. Also, I heard over from Rav Meir Lichtenstein that his grandfather said about this Mishnah, and he says that he thinks it's the only time that his grandfather allowed for such an interpretation of a Mishnah. Here, Rabbi Akiva in the Mishnah is speaking post-Churban. And Rabbi Akiva is trying to bring some sort of nechama to Klal Yisrael at this point in time to say that you don't have the Mikdash anymore. We don't have the Avodat Kohen Gadol. They're left in a position of despair, of not knowing how Yom Kippur is going to continue. And Rabbi Akiva says, no, Ashreichem Yisrael, that it's not about the Mikdash, not about the Avodah, it's about being before Hashem. Hashem is Mikveh Yisrael. Hashem is the Mikveh, and therefore, Lifnei Hashem Titaharu, going before Hashem is also a process of Tahara. And therefore, the Yom HaKippurim can still live on. Maybe we don't have the Avodah, but can live on in the sense that we can go Lifnei Hashem and we can become Tahor because of Zrakti Malachem, Mayim Torim, Vitaratem, Mikol Tumotoichem, Gulaichem, Ataratchem. That Hashem provides the Tahara even in the era post the Mikdash. And that might have been a partial Nechama that Rabbi Akiva is trying to provide over here. In general, we don't like to interpret Mishnayot in that way, because we like to think that the thought of Rabbi Akiva is true, the Dorot. You could say that. That's no problem to say that in Rabbi Akiva. But I think that Rabbi Akiva's statement is especially pointed in the context of knowing that he lives post-Churban, and that his statement here is even a partial Nechama to the post-Churban Dorot, that understand, that realize they've lost the Mikdash, lost the Kohen Gadol, lost the Avodat Yom HaKippurim, but there is still something left to be thankful for. Ashreichem Yisrael, b'fnei mi atem mitaharim, u'mi mitaher etchem. Okay, we'll stop over here.